Good day, and welcome to episode 12 of the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour. I'm James Gordon, and I'm part of the team behind a weekly community gathering focused on raising awareness and sharing ideas about important issues that concern residents of Guelph and beyond. This week, we're talking about a current Guelph issue, council composition, ward boundaries, and the discussion of whether we should have full or part-time councillors. Our guest for the September 3rd, 2020 meeting was Dylan McMahon, Guelph's Deputy City Clerk. He was joined by Kevin Bowman from Democracy Guelph. Dustin Brown was our MC, and we heard the voices of the two city councillors on the call, Phil Ault and yours truly, as well as numerous participants, including Morgan, Joanna, Brian, Susan, and Ted. We start with Dylan McMahon.
I think I'm especially excited this morning because we're talking about some really big questions and a really big project that has spurred, I think, a pretty good community discussion over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And as someone who works in the clerk's office, poli-sci grad from U of G, this is the good stuff. This is right at sort of the heart of democracy in Guelph. So I can't wait to hear the conversation. I'm going to keep my remarks relatively brief, 6 or 7 minutes. Hopefully talk mostly about those big questions, but I will touch a little bit on process and timelines and how this project fits with a few others we have on the go. And then I look forward to the conversation. So this is what we're talking about today. This is the big stuff. We're talking about council composition review. It's the first of three phases of some sort of interrelated projects. But this is the one where engagement is active right now. And we're asking some pretty fundamental questions and questions that don't have easy answers. So should councillors be full or part-time? How big should our city council be? How should we elect folks? Is it at large? Is it in wards? Is it a combination of the two? How many councillors should we have per ward if we do go with a ward system? These are big questions. They don't really have right or wrong answers. There's pros and cons to all sort of governance systems, whether it's locally, federally, provincially. And that's why we need your help. That's why we want everyone to go to haveyoursay.guelph.ca to ask questions, to fill out the survey we have there, but also to learn more. There's a lot of resources available for each of these questions online that can help the public become a little bit more informed when they answer them. So thinking a little bit about should counselors be full or part-time, you can go on to haveyoursay.guelph.ca right now and see a quantification of how counselors spend their time and how much time they spend per week. So you can look at that and go, you know, based on how much time people are working, I can, you know, fill out a survey and answer some questions about full or part-time in a more thoughtful way, perhaps. And we have those types of background or information available for all the questions, including comparator info for some of our comparator municipalities and that kind of thing. So the engagement period does close tomorrow. So encouraging people to get out there, ideally today, tomorrow, haveyoursay.guelph.ca, so you can fill out that survey, keep asking questions. We've been holding virtual office hours throughout the engagement period as well. We've got a virtual office hour today and tomorrow. It's me actually manning the phones on that. So if you've got questions before you want to fill out a survey, or before you want to pose a question online, my phone extension and everything is posted online. Give me a call. We're happy to have these conversations with people. And to not, you know, just to provide information and to try and make sure that folks feel comfortable answering the survey. They feel like they've got the information they need to answer the survey. And I know so far, and I'm going to go over a few of our engagement stats at the end, but I know so far we've been getting really good feedback. We have over 400 responses to the survey, and they're not quick, you know, 2-minute fill outs of a 10-minute survey. They're really thoughtful, and the comments and the feedback are really good. So we're very happy to see that, and I'm looking forward to answering a few questions about these big questions as we go on. But I will, if you can jump forward, Dustin, talk a little bit for the next few minutes about the background of this project, some of our timelines and how it's interconnected with other projects. This has actually been on the go for the better part of 7 years. So it was 2013 that council for the first time said, we want to do a council composition and ward boundary review, and we want to do it before the 2018 municipal election. Ultimately, the project wasn't funded in time to do it for the 2018 election. So we came back, we got funding in 2020 so that we could complete the work before the 2022 municipal election. So that's the council direction that we're operating on, is to work to get this done before 2022. We'd initially planned to have in-person engagement for phase one, which is council composition, in March and April of this year. Obviously, COVID came along. There's a three plus month pause in all engagement that the city conducts. And we've been able to sort of start back up with engagement in August. So our timelines are the same. The amount of time we have open, the 3 weeks for engagement, is the same as we had planned for in person. Obviously, based on public health guidelines right now, we're not doing the in-person component, but we have done a virtual town hall, and we have sort of beefed up some of the online offerings as well. Perfect. So here's our timelines. There's three interconnected pieces to what I think you can kind of think of as one project. So there's council composition. That's open now. That's what we're talking about today. Then there's going to be voting systems and methods, and then there's going to be a ward boundary review. So I'll touch on voting systems and methods and ward boundary very briefly, knowing that our focus today, I think, really is council composition, but it's worth knowing how they fit together. So I'll highlight again that first line there, council composition engagement, August 17th to September 4th. Encourage everybody to, of course, participate in conversations like this, but also to go online, ask questions, learn a little bit, and fill out that survey. Ultimately, the results of that engagement will go to our expert consultant team, who will bring forward an independent recommendation to City Council on November 5th. I want everybody to get involved in the engagement right now, but of course you can submit correspondence, and we'd love to have you come out and delegate at that November 5th meeting as well. After November 5th, in fact, just a week after, we'll launch online engagement for voting systems and methods. So that's your, what type of election are we running? Is it first past the post? Is it a ranked ballot election? It's also the method we use. So is it internet? Is it mail-in? Is it just, you know, paper ballots? And how we count them? Are we count them by hand? Are we going to use tabulators like we have in the past? That's voting systems and methods. So that engagement will begin right after we've got council direction on council composition. So we want the public to know, council has said we're going to have this many councillors with this many per ward. Now go ahead and take a look at the voting systems and methods. And that decision, ultimately, that last bullet point there, works to a legislative deadline. The province says that we have to have a decision, bylaw on voting systems and methods by May 1st, 2021, in order for it to be enforced for the 2022 election. So we need to work to that May 1st deadline when it comes to voting systems and methods. And we've arranged the steps so that we get the outcome of council composition before we go out for that engagement. And then that brings us to the third phase, which is the ward boundary review. The third and sort of final phase of these interconnected projects, ward boundaries. So for council composition, we're going to talk about how many councillors and how many per ward. And that's going to necessitate a certain number of wards, assuming we didn't go all at large. It's not going to talk about the actual draw the lines on the map. So hypothetically, if council said, you know what, we want to have 12 councillors, but we want one councillor per ward, then we know, okay, we're going to be doing engagement in January, February of 2021 on what those 12 wards could look like. And that'll be the opportunity for the public to come in and, you know, sort of draw the boundary lines and move things around and decide what neighborhood should be together and what those ward structures actually look like. That will get its own engagement period in January and February of 2021. I've added online there because I'm assuming that come January and February, we're still not going to be doing in-person engagement at the city. If public health guidelines were to change, then we would certainly do in person if it's feasible. But our assumption right now is that it's likely to be online. The last bullet point there again is another legislative deadline. So in order to have revised ward boundaries in effect for the 2022 election, we need to have the bylaw passed by December 31st, 2021. But because ward boundary bylaws are appealable to the local planning appeals tribunal, we actually need to pass the bylaw significantly before that deadline. The best practice in the sector would be to leave a year for a ward boundary appeal bylaw for a city the size of Guelph to work its way through the LPAP process. We've lost 6 months out of that year that we had in there basically because of the COVID delay. So now we have 6 months. So we're looking to get the bylaw passed in May or June. That'll give us a 6 month buffer where hopefully any appeals we do receive can work their way through LPAT, so we have a final bylaw approved by December 31st, and then you've got your revised or potentially revised council composition, ward boundaries in place for the 2022 election. I do want to highlight for each of these three phases, they get their own community engagement. So right now we're talking council composition. Hopefully me or one of my colleagues will be back at one of these breakfasts talking about voting systems and methods, and then talking about ward boundaries when the time comes to, because although they're related, they are distinct projects that are all going to have their own community engagement period available for folks to participate. Finally, I just wanted to talk a little bit on the next slide about our engagement stats so far. So we're quite pleased with the engagement we've had. We've had over 400 surveys completed on haveyoursay.guelph.ca right now. Like I said, those survey responses are robust, and there's a significant volume of information included in them, and it's well thought out, and it's really reasoned feedback. We're also collecting emails, so we've got another 100 or so emails we've received at clerks@guelph.ca, which will also be analyzed. We've had 70,000 people reached through Facebook and Twitter. We've had, I'm especially happy to see 2,600 people who viewed our virtual town hall meeting. Some of those live, but then lots of those folks after the fact as well. And we've had excellent media coverage, 17 stories on our phase one council composition engagement period alone, seven of which were opinion pieces, editorials, or letters to the editor. We've also been working in partnership with post-secondary institutions, so Conestoga and U of G, to try and get the word out about this phase of the project on social media, geared at students who we know have a very important voice in the city. And we've also paid for advertisement directed at students as much as we can, to try and collect their feedback in a time that we know isn't necessarily ideal for students right now. And we'll continue to do that through the other phases of the project and engagement that'll happen in November and January, February of next year. So that's it for me. That's the overview. Just on my last slide, one more plug for folks to go to haveyoursay.guelph.ca to get involved. But of course, submit correspondence, come and delegate at the November 5th council meeting. And the same will hold true for the other systems or the other phases of this project, voting systems and ward boundaries. There's the engagement, but we encourage you to get involved, come out to council when you see the final recommendations. And beyond that, I'm happy to answer any questions when the time comes.
Great. Thank you very much, Dylan. There are a lot of questions and requests to comment filtering in through the chat. Absolutely. But first, I see that Kevin Bowman is here. So Kevin, if you would like to give us your perspective on this and everything that Democracy Guelph has been working on this file, then it's up to you. The floor is yours.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dustin. And thanks everybody for coming to talk about this very important topic. As the primary organizer and spokesperson for Democracy Guelph, we've been engaging citizens of Guelph on some of these questions that are being asked of folks for a couple of years. So I just wanted to quickly throw in some of the conclusions that we've come to in our discussions with citizens. So out of the phase one questions that are being considered, the size of council really depends on, our concern, or the concern that we hear from a lot of citizens, is less about the specific size of council, the number of councillors, and more about the capacity of council. So if you have 12 part-time councillors, there's a certain number of working hours that you can get out of those folks in terms of their attendance at council meetings, involvement with the community, and representing their constituents. And so that number hasn't changed much since, 1991, whereas the population has increased. So we're less concerned about the total number of councillors and more concerned about the working hours and the capacity of council to do their job. So if the number of councillors were to be reduced, but they remained part-time, we think that would be a mistake. Whereas if the number of councillors were to be reduced, but they were shifted full-time, and so that the total number of working hours that was available to the city from their councillors was remain the same or increased, then that wouldn't necessarily be a concern. That would maybe even be an improvement. And so while moving to full-time council will be unusual for Guelph, since there's not many municipalities in Ontario that do that, we think there's merit in considering that. The other main concern that Democracy Guelph has heard from citizens is that moving towards the single member wards where you only have one counselor per ward, we get a lot of negative reaction from constituents towards that. Most constituents really like the idea of having two counselors per ward. They feel like that system's really worked for them, because if they can't get in touch with one, or if they have a bad relationship with one, then there's an alternate or a backup they can go to. And so there's a lot of good practical reasons to keep two counselors per ward if one counselor becomes incapacitated, or if they're unwilling or unable to represent certain constituents because of differences of opinion or political ideology. There's a potential backup. There's somebody else who can possibly speak to and represent those constituents. So those are the two main points that I wanted to share with folks based on Democracy Guelph's interactions and consultations over the years. And if anybody had any follow-up questions or concerns, I'd be happy to speak to those.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. So let's go to this busy chat here. I know, let me just start. I'm just going to start with a question from myself that maybe others can jump in on. I think maybe top of people's minds is the timeline and its relation to COVID. So we know that the project has been delayed by 6 months already. And Dylan, I heard you talk about when things need to be passed in order for it to be implemented before the next election. What would your response be to somebody who is concerned that this sort of consultation shouldn't be happening during a pandemic in the first place? Just given the weight of the implications to our democratic system.
Yeah, it's a good question, you know, and I think it's one that we struggled with for the 3 months or so that the city had paused engagement. And the question of how long do you keep things paused for, I think is a difficult one. We feel like right now at this stage in the pandemic, at least, that we were able to again have the attention of the public. And I think we see that in the media stories and that kind of thing that are published, whereas certainly in March and April, I don't think we would have been able to get that engagement. You know, I would love to do 3 months of community engagement if that was possible within the timelines that we're working within. So between the direction from council to get this completed by 2022 and some of those provincial legislated deadlines. We feel, of course, in consultation with our community engagement experts and the outside experts that we've hired, that we would be able to do engagement now and get a significant volume of response and a volume that would be enough for our expert independent team to review it and to get a feeling or a snapshot of what the community thought on this particular issue. You know, the pandemic caught us off guard, right? So whether it was going to be now or later is really a decision about, well, are you doing this for 2022 or are you not? Because that's how tight our deadlines get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I can see arguments for or against influencing before the next election for sure. Morgan, you had a question about the timing of the survey. Would you like to follow up with that?
Given that it is so quickly on the heels of the Metrolinx engagement and there was so much uproar about the short period of time of the Metrolinx engagement and then the extension of it, giving the citizens a period of, I believe it ended up being about 4 weeks, because it is summertime, that's why I had the question about timing. It just seems a little bit strange to me that the city and like the mayor and a couple of city councilors were railing against Metrolinx having a very short online engagement process. And now it seems like the city's doing something very similar. And again, it's because it's August and, you know, I get the problem with the COVID and I get the problem with the length of time constraints. Just having it the last 3 weeks with everything that's going on, people are away, people are trying to figure out what's going on with their kids for school. Why is it only 3 weeks?
To speak to the length of time specifically, and I think I mentioned this, or I may have forgotten to in my presentation, but it is actually the same amount of time we intended to do back in March and April. So the month has changed. The length of time that we had planned to do this has not really. So what we've heard from our community engagement folks is that 3 weeks for each phase of this project, so a combined 9 weeks for the three phases that I talked about, was a sufficient amount of time to gather the type of community feedback that we were looking for. So we've listened to that advice. I agree the timing is not ideal. You know, we wouldn't have put this in August if it weren't for COVID. But to try and match up with those legislative deadlines and still get this work done between 2022, we've aimed to try and strike a balance between engaging on this important work, but also making sure that we continue to get the work done.
Just to continue along the line of timing and duration of the survey being open, one big stakeholder group I could think of that maybe would be adversely impacted by this is students who, I saw you had targeted social media ads and a partnership with the university. I wonder if you could expand on that and tell us what that has looked like and whether you have any metrics for engagement from students.
I don't have any metrics. I'll say that up front. And I think one of the things we heard loud and clear, certainly over the last week and a half, 10 days or so, was that people were concerned that students were going to be left out of the engagement for this phase, just by virtue of the timing. So we've worked through social media and through paid advertising buys to try and target students as much as possible in the last 3 or 4 days of this engagement. It's not perfect. I wish, quite frankly, we had done that at the beginning. I think we can own that, and that's a misstep on our part to some degree. But we know we're going to be able to get some level of engagement from students on this phase, and we will work to do better on that front in the other two phases of engagement.
Hi, I just wrote something in the chat area, but I can see that you are trying to get this done in the time frame so that there are you're able to deal with any appeals that might take place. But why compress the time frame given our COVID experience? Just go along on a more regular time frame, and if there are appeals, there are appeals, and if it doesn't make this election cycle, then it will make the next election cycle. Is there some kind of urgency? Well, obviously you want to get this done, but you want good legislation, just you're compressing it so that you have that appeal period that you can get through. And I'm just wondering if that's the right way to be looking at it.
Fair question. One of the things we look at, especially, it's a little bit less true of the council composition side, but will be especially true of the ward boundary phase. Ward boundary phase, or the ward boundary review, more so than the one we're in right now, will be based on demographics and demographic trends. So there's lots of things to consider when you redraw ward boundaries, but one of the biggest is population increase and population parity between those wards. And one of the things we'd like to avoid is doing work in 2020 to look at ward boundaries and then actually not implementing something potentially until 2026. You can look out 10, 15, 20, 25 years in these reviews, but you ideally, if you're going to put something in place for 2026, we should do that demographic work in 2023, in 2024, to be closer to that deadline. So we've aimed to make sure that the work we're doing now applies for 2022, because that's when it will be the most relevant, the most empirically accurate, and we think we can do it an engagement process that's still fair, robust, and consistent across all the phases.
So I'm going to go to, let's maybe just switch the topic a little bit and talk about maybe the origins of the study. So you said in you presented in your slides, it's been in the works for quite a long time. Yet I feel like many people in this chat room feel that things have been happening quickly and things are just coming to the forefront now. And I even saw either Lynn or Ron in the chat saying this is a they're disappointed to not hear about it in the during the 2018 election. They hadn't heard about it from councillors who were running for election or re-election. So I'm gonna invite both of our councillors. Almost said councillors at large. They're at large in this meeting, but they're not at large. If you'd like to respond to that, maybe why people didn't hear about it during the 2018 election in your platforms. And then I'd like to turn to Dylan after that and just ask about, who initiated this study and what were the reasons for doing so, including, why are the questions included in the survey being asked, and what was the process for coming up with what the survey looks like specifically? We'll go to James and Phil first.
Thanks, Dustin. I agree with Ron and or Lynn there about that comment of why it wasn't an election issue last time. I take responsibility personally that I didn't mention it as much as I might have, but it would have been a really good opportunity. It didn't happen. If there's any reason, I think that we were all running within a certain context, within the existing system or plan. So it actually felt like to me, okay, I'll get reelected and then I'll start to advocate for what I think the structure should look like. But that was a good opportunity. I think what we can do now is to see, having missed that opportunity, what is the best form of engagement with it. I have my own opinions on what that structure might look like, but I think I mostly want to be in listening mode today too, to see what makes sense to everybody here.
My take on it is slightly different. When I was asked by people and over the last 5 years, 6 years, when I've been asked by people, I'm very frank on this issue. I do think that we do need to do some review of council ward boundaries. However, I am an advocate more of tweaking them than a significant radical overhaul. One of the points that I've been raising in the chat that I think is very important is that actually Guelph wards are relatively proportionate, although we are growing on the south end. And I don't think that we should lose track of that. There are a number of issues that complicate this. For example, Ward 3, which is geographically the smallest ward, is actually the third largest in population. Ward 3, which has third largest population, also has a significant number of people living in it that are not Canadian citizens, that are not eligible to vote. Ward 6 has a large population, but it also is in the same situation. Many people who do not have eligibility to vote, and further complicated by many people who won't vote because they are students and don't feel that they have a strong affinity to the community. That's nothing against students that want to vote, but it was raised. More importantly, the issue that was raised more often with me was full or part-time counselors. And at that point, I was very clear that I felt that the work that we do actually does entail the need for full-time counselors. But I've become more and more flexible on that in some senses, because I am concerned about the possibility that council does become careerist. On the other hand, I do see that full-time counselors does provide the opportunity for many more marginalized people to consider running. And I'll give you what I've considered to be the example from Ward 3, and I have to be blunt. This comes from the fact that I deal with the Willow Road area, where we're dealing with some of the poorest people in Guelph. For a person who is a single parent to be able to consider to run from, say, the Willow Road area is virtually impossible unless you establish a guaranteed income. And the income of a counselor at $40,000 for some people seems like a lot. On the other hand, I would argue that it's not much at all. What it does do is it tends to reinforce the people that will run for council. I'm retired. I can afford to do it. There are other people that have opportunities because they're independent business people that might be able to afford to do it. And these are significant challenges. I'm still not at this point sold on the part-time versus the full-time issue. On the other hand, like I said, I think that in terms of ward review, we should be very, very careful with it. We should do very much like the provincial and the federal governments. And these need tweaking, not radical overhaul. And radical overhaul, I actually think, could put us into some form of a political crisis as we tend to confuse a system that's really only been in place for 30 years.
Okay, thanks, James and Phil. And Lynn and or Ron, I hope that satisfies your curiosity about that. So as I said, Dylan, let's turn it over to the origins. And specifically, I'm wondering, was this something that people from the community were asking for a review of? Was it more something that came from administration or counselors? And same question for whether it's something that people have been asking to have implemented before 2022, before the next election, to be specific.
When you asked the question the first time, I hurriedly went into the virtual archives over here to see how far back I could trace it. So as early as 2008, you've got counselors talking about full-time or part-time. We do reviews of counselor salaries once per term. So there's a resident advisory committee that gets together and talks about counselor salaries. And it looks like through that process, the issue of full-time versus part-time counselors started to arise. There was a couple of surveys around the 2010 mark to counselors saying, do you think you should be full-time? Do you think you should be part-time? In 2012, there was a staff report on counselor employment status talking about some of those survey results. And ultimately, it was council who directed staff to look at that question, and staff who came back and said, well, if we're talking full-time or part-time, this should be expanded a little bit, and you get the whole council composition, employment status, and ward boundary review. So I think the answer lies somewhere between council and staff. I don't think it's something, at least in my time in the clerk's office, that we've heard overwhelmingly needs to be done from the community. Although the feedback's been great when we have talked about it, it's more some combination of council and staff.
If you can tell us, then what does the feedback look like so far on some of the main sticking points? Has there been any overwhelming response one way or the other as to full-time, part-time, number of counselors per ward, anything in the first phase?
That's a good question. Now, so I mean, I have seen not all, but some of the preliminary survey results. I don't know that there's a benefit to telling people now what their peers and colleagues are saying necessarily. What I will say is that in almost every category, there is no one response with over 50%, or even close to 50%. So in almost all cases, if you're talking about should council be the same size, bigger or smaller, you don't see 70% of people taking us in one direction, and that holds true throughout. The other thing I'd say is that even when you do see 35 or 40% of people going one way, when you read through the reasons can be very, very different. So people may want the same thing, but their reasons for supporting it vary considerably. So is that fair? Is that enough? Am I trying to escape a question that I should just?
Well, it's your discretion, certainly. If you want to offer more than you can, I'm sure people will be quite curious.
I think that probably makes sense for right now. Obviously, all of these results in full, sort of unredacted, will be available when the report goes to council on November 5th.
Okay. With that, then, I know we have lots of people who want to pipe up. I'm going to start with Brian Holstein, and then we'll go to Susan Watson. So if you can try to flesh out your questions or your comments about things, but also keep it to a reasonable time limit for everybody, just so everybody can participate, then that would be fantastic. But I'll hand it over to Brian now.
Okay, just a couple of things. The number of responses for a city of our size kind of underlines the inappropriate timing for the survey. You have people who, despite the pandemic, are still on holidays at their cottages, and they are also at their wits' end because of the amount of time they've had to deal with their kids at home. Maybe city business is not all that important to them. Both the 3 weeks and the timing of this is of the survey is not so great. Secondly, I want to speak specifically about an at-large system. Now, I know that that is probably unlikely, but for those who weren't around at the time, this was brought up during the 2003-2006 council term, when the at-large system was advocated by several councillors at the time. It was thoroughly defeated, as were each of those councillors who were advocating it, with, I think, one exception. And had been rejected in Ward 3, then that person would be representing the city, but without the representation of his original constituents. Sorry about that. And secondly, the idea of the ordinary person. Phil was talking about some of the areas. How could somebody from that area afford to campaign across the whole city? They couldn't. It would be impossible for them to do it. So it's going to be for those people who can afford to run, or for those people who have the resources behind them to fund their election. So their comments, not so much a question, but hopefully the at-large system is a dead in the water. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian, for saying that. I think barriers to participation on council is a recurring theme that I'm seeing in the chat, and definitely relates to some of the things that Susan Watson has been bringing up. Susan, would you want to flesh out some of those concerns that you're speaking about?
I know I put several things in the chat, so I'll try and follow up. I guess I want to start by saying that council has no mandate to introduce an at-large electoral system without a citywide referendum. It's just amazing to me that that's even part of this discussion. And if it is a recommendation of this process, then it needs to be put to a question on the ballot for the entire electorate to weigh in. Our current system was reintroduced, the ward system, via a referendum in 1991. And as Brian said, it was reconfirmed by 80% of voters in 2006. And I think there are certain interest groups which are really served by an at-large system. So the candidates who have an advantage are the ones who are funded by developers who can afford to run a citywide campaign. And in 2018, individuals with links to the development community funded 25% of the entire election through their donations. So there's big influence in our elections in that regard. Like everyone else, I'm concerned about the consultation window. The number one principle of our community engagement policy is to give all citizens an opportunity to participate. And people are just away. Everything was on lockdown and then everyone went hooray. And many people are away during August, especially the students. So I really question whether it's realistic at all that any appeal could be resolved at LPAT within 6 months. LPAT itself was shut down. There's a tremendous backlog of hearings. So I think that's it's wishful thinking, even if we made our deadlines, that an appeal could be resolved by the deadline. I can't imagine how that could happen. And I guess related to that, my question for Dylan would be, if we get sidetracked with an appeal and we can't meet the deadline, is it an option for us to transition to full-time councillors, leaving our 6 wards and 12 councillors in place? So that's a question I'd have. And regarding, I know everyone freaks out about spending more money, but we've had 12 to 18 part-time councillors since 1867, and our population is 10 times the amount. And so really our representation in terms of population has just decreased over the decades. So my point that I made in the chat is, if we can spend $4.1 million annually to add 30 full-time equivalents to our police force, can we not add 6 full-time equivalents to our council to have a better quality of democracy in contrast? So I just, you know, would ask people to think of it in that context, regardless of what other cities are doing. And then lastly, I put a link in the chat to barriers to the participation of women in politics. Financing is an issue for women, and certainly the part-time nature of the job has been identified as a barrier to women's participation. I think that's my piece. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Susan. Dylan, there's a lot there to respond to, or Kevin, if you'd like to jump in. Specifically, I see people in the chat wanting, it was actually James Gordon wanted to follow up on the idea of a referendum in order to enact any changes. Is there merit to that idea? Could that be enacted before the 2022 election?
I think I can answer that. I won't speak to whether there's merit or not necessarily, but I can certainly speak to the process. So the Municipal Elections Act is what sort of gives city council the ability to ask for a referendum. It's referred to in the act as a question to electors. If you hear us use that kind of terminology, it can only be done during an election. So our only ability to go out and ask everybody a question like that is during an election. So you've got your ballot, mayor, councillor, school board, trustee, and there's another question effectively on the ballot. It has to be council that asks for that, and absolutely they could. At any point, council could direct staff to add virtually any question onto a ballot. It will never, or I shouldn't say never, it will almost never be legally binding when it comes to the outcome. To get a legally binding referendum or question to electors result in Ontario, you need more than half of total electors to respond in a specific way. But it is obviously a valid point of engagement and feedback and a snapshot of what the community is feeling. So that's always within council's purview to direct us to do. I don't think at this point that staff have considered recommending that to council, but the recommendations coming out of this process are also independent of staff. And I think that's the way the project is designed, because ultimately we report through to city council and this has significant implications for city council. So it's a bit of an arm's reach project in the way it's completed, and it's the same way when we do ward boundary reviews and that kind of thing at the federal or provincial level. So would there be a cost associated with that? Absolutely. I don't know exactly what that would be, but of course there would be a cost. The other thing I can answer is, I think Susan, and you may have to help me, I think I got your question about changes to council composition or employment status, for example, without associated ward boundaries, and could that be done before 2022?
Right. Could we just move to, could we just switch to full time, changing nothing else, even if there was an appeal to LPAT?
Yeah. And the answer to that is yes. The only piece of this sort of puzzle that can be appealed to LPAT is the ward boundary review. So a council could switch to, you know, whatever, 6 full time councillors, 12 full time councillors with 2 per ward. They could make any changes that still let them use the existing wards without necessarily having to have that ward boundary review passed. Obviously, it's our position that you shouldn't do one without the other, because we know our ward boundaries need to be reviewed. But, you know, when we talk about full-time or part-time counselors, obviously we are talking about how much time counselors spend working, but really I think what we're talking about is how much they're paid. We have counselors right now, and this information is online, who are already working full-time hours. It seems disingenuous to say that it's not a full-time job if Councillor Gordon or Alt are spending 40 or 50 hours or whatever a week on it right now. It's more about are we paying them with the expectation they're going to do that, or are we paying them with the expectation they're going to work less than that and they're sort of going above and beyond? So certainly that could change. They could council could change their employment status, which is to say change the amount they're paid to something that is more consistent with a full-time job of this nature, and do that for 2022 without touching ward boundaries.
Really quickly, Dylan raises an interesting point about pay. And James, I don't know about you, but what's really interesting is we actually are on our pay slips assessed an hourly rate. And I think right now it's assessed at about $20 or $22 an hour. I don't know where that number comes from. And I actually don't know how the hours that I spend are assessed. And I question whether, in fact, that there is a formal understanding of what we do as counselors with regards to establishing policy, reading our packages, and so on, and whether the other things that we do, dealing with constituents, dealing with community groups, even, say, meeting yesterday with James and a constituent downtown is associated. It's really problematic with part-time counselors and without a clearly defined job structure to assess whether a counselor is doing full-time or part-time work. But we are clearly paid for part-time work at what I would consider to be a reasonable stipend. But I've always said to people that I'm very blessed because I have a pension that allows me to subsidize my community work at council. And, you know, I'm not being facetious about that. I'm quite clear. If you are a single parent who is living on a marginal income, that $40,000 that we get is nothing. And therefore, it is an incredible disincentive to anyone to run. So Dylan's point about the pay is the issue is important. But the workload is equally important. And because we don't define it carefully, James, you want to weigh in on this. You can do nothing and you can do a ton.
No, thanks, Phil. I will comment briefly. I think the other aspect that you've alluded to is the demographic of council is skewed to what we don't look around that horseshoe like our city looks now. And that is because people like you, you're retired, you can afford this gig, you can devote more than half of your time to it. I can't, although my other job is extinct right now because of COVID. However, if we want a diversity on council, I'll use your example, you know, a single mom with a family and a mortgage, there's no way they could devote the time with the income that it generates. So I'm very keen to find a way to address that so that we have that diversity on council that reflects our city. And that does have a lot to do with the pay scale, I think.
Just a thought, Phil and James's day started at 7:30 or earlier this morning as counselors, and will probably run into the evening. They're full-time counselors.
I'll move on. I wanted to talk about the ward boundaries a little bit because I think that's a little bit of a less sexy topic, but one that still merits some attention. Ted, you were wondering at the start, where do I find the population distribution by ward? Which ones are bigger? Which ones are smaller? So maybe, Dylan, you can give a preliminary, just a quick answer on that. And I also saw Morgan, I think, was asking about how the review process would incorporate the plan to grow and the increase in population, particularly in Clear Malpe. But go ahead, Dylan. Sorry.
I think I may. Sorry, one sec here.
We will find it. Sorry.
It's a more general background or document on the current system. It's not in wards versus at large. I think it's in the current system document, maybe page 2 or 3 of it. And my question is why that table doesn't include student population. Student populations have been excluded, and that's 30,000 people who are in the city when elections take place because they're a set date in October, and they live in wards 3, 5, and 6, and I don't see how those populations can be excluded.
You're bang on as far as where that information is, for starters. So it's on the current electoral system, background or online. For reference, our smallest ward is Ward 3, which has 17,500 people, and our largest is Ward 6, with about 10,000 more, so 27,000, and 8% more of the population in Ward 6 versus Ward 3, for example. The data you see right there now, Susan, is from the latest census. When it comes time to actually review the ward boundaries, I have no doubt that we'll be considering student populations and considering the electoral list that we get through MPAC, which is actually now switching to Elections Ontario when it comes to managing our voters list. So what you see there is the census snapshot, which doesn't include students who are living in Guelph. When it comes time to review specific ward boundaries, however many wards we have, absolutely that will be included.
Still the question about how we're going to deal with the projected growth. If we're going to be looking at new ward boundaries, we have to consider the fact that the majority of the growth is down in the south. There is an entire greenfield that could potentially have an additional 25,000 people living there by 2031 to 2041. There's no point in doing a review if we're just going to be back here in 10 years.
Thanks, Morgan, for asking that question again, because I forgot. You're absolutely right. All of those projected population numbers, so that would be our independent team working closely with not just census data, not just the university, but also folks in our planning department to make sure that we have an understanding of where our projected population growth is going to be for the next 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years, will absolutely form an integral part of that ward boundary review. Not as relevant for phase one, but when we get to that ward boundary review, absolutely those projections will be considered, and it will be to some degree a balancing act of wards that are proportional enough right now and aren't going to skew out of line as time goes forward.
Okay, a quick question still on the topic of ward boundary changes. This one from Brian, and I'm just going to read it verbatim. Who does the work? Is that staff? Will the mayor or other elected members be allowed to influence their recommendations, perhaps to their advantage? Will, and my editorialized ending to that, is Guelph vulnerable to gerrymandering? I'll leave that with you.
I think it's in some ways it's a simple question to answer that isn't so easy when you start to really think about it. Ultimately, who makes this decision about council composition, about councillor salaries, and about ward boundaries? Council makes this decision. So is council able to influence the recommendations that come from our third party team? No, they aren't. And that's the same for council composition as it is for ward boundaries. So it's not being done by staff, although we do help sort of project manage, and we certainly have a role to play in the engagement side of things. The recommendations coming from our independent team are not influenced by council. And that's the same for ward boundaries as council composition. Ultimately, when our team comes forward and says, you know, here's our revised 6 wards or revised 12 wards or whatever it is, can a member of council say, you know, I want Ward 5 to move from this street to this street? Yeah, they could. It's within the rights of council legislatively to approve whatever ward boundaries they see fit, subject to that LPAT appeal.
Okay, Phil or James, happy to hear that. Just kidding. Okay. Yeah, I have a good closing question in mind that I want to hear from both you and Kevin. But first, a question for James and Phil, a real question for James and Phil. What do your hour books look like? How much time do you spend on a weekly basis doing council meetings? And maybe if you can split that up as
sure.
Community engagement versus reading material.
Yeah, I can start with that. Dylan, actually, I don't know if you can pull them up. We were all surveyed about that. I don't know if it came with individual names. I think that I started off, because I'm self-employed, I was having a hard time structuring myself. So it quickly became full-time right away. And I've had to temper that just to survive with my livelihood. But I would say that I spend 35 hours a week on it. And that is, Dylan would know this, there's sometimes 10 hours a week just in sitting in meetings. Our council meetings often go 8 hours, which is something, another thing to address. But the constituency work really comes and goes. Right now, I'm probably spent 40 hours this past week just talking about one issue in my ward. And the week before that, it was probably the same number of hours, even though we were supposed to be in summer break, talking about the library issue. Because whatever comes forward, some counselors get identified with those issues more than others. So it really shifts when that comes along. Just like Phil probably was very busy with Metrolinx while I was busy with the library.
It's a good question, but it's also in some senses not a fair question to just ask James and me, because I do think, I can't comprehend how much time I put in, because I just saw a chat comment go up by Morgan. It's crazy in some senses. There goes the phone. Guess what? That's somebody calling to ask a question that I can't answer right now. I started answering questions this morning at 7. Last night, I think I ended. I was in a bit of a discussion with some other counselors up till about 9, 10 o'clock at night. I just asked my wife, because I thought that she was a better judge of this than am I. She says she doesn't know. But what I will give you a good example of is that when I go away on my busman's holidays camping, I take my iPad and my phone with me, because as much as anything else, I feel that I'm on call about 18 hours a day.
Poor Phil. That's all for today. Thanks as always to our guests and to the Breezy Breakfast team of Phil Ault, Dustin Brown, Tanya Givert, Hina Mystery, Sequoia Kim, and our many supporters who gather every Thursday at the unkind hour of 8 a.m. Music for the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour is by Jules Germ. If you'd like to join us in one of our live Zoom sessions, or you have any questions, email me, James Gordon, at james@jamesgordon.ca. If you'd like to support the work that we do in this program, please visit patreon.com and look for Breezy Bullhorn. We're all a bunch of beleaguered volunteers. Thank you for listening.